really helpful as well. So just keep that in the back of your mind as we talk through today. Other than this particular agenda, are there any other items that people would like to touch upon this morning? And some of this we might cover in, the check-in and the questions that have come up over the course of the week. All right. It's Friday morning, right? People are ready to start their weekend. Okay.
It's Felicity. I raised my hand. Yeah. I didn't want to talk over anybody. I was wondering if there was a way that clients could contact the local provider and then, you know, connect with 211, like in a warm transfer way. Like, can we just iron that process out? Maybe you did this and I missed it in another meeting, but it sounds like there are clients in MMW who have been referred, but then aren't like making it through to the appointment. So
they're not making it through which getting appointment? An appointment.
They're not making it through to getting an appointment. Like they're saying they can't figure out how to get through at the 211 process. So thanks.
So yeah. So why don't we'll talk about that in a second. Okay, Felicity.
Great.
I'll add it to the list. Yep.
Thanks.
Just don't let me forget if I move on too quickly. Okay. All right. So thank you for raising it. So I don't really have any major updates this week. Like we typically talk about, you know, when the things at the state level are changing. In terms of any major updates, it's been pretty status quo. But I will say that we have seen a pretty significant uptick since I last put this slide together on Thursday, which is good, right? We want to be serving people and meeting the need. So, you know, over the past week, we've had an increase of 70 appointments in from 211. And again, I think what's good is like we are seeing the number of weekly appointments increase steadily.
Join the meeting.
Most importantly, I think that's because of the expanded eligibility, expanded prioritization, and probably word is starting to spread about access to the program. So you can see, not surprisingly, you know, our largest growth areas continue to be in Hartford, Haven. Central actually had a really big uptick this week. And in particular, you know, since they only started taking appointments 19 days ago, you know, they've already had 19 referrals into the project. So you can really see, I think, in particular, in that New Britain, Southington, Berlin, Plainville, and I'm forgetting one other town. Like really there seems to be a pretty big need in that particular area. And we're also seeing, which is really good, an increase in the number of households enrolled. So that number has increased by 12 since last week. I know I've been in touch with many of you over this past week about some challenges in terms of HMIS. And making sure that the functionality is working appropriately. So we do have a meeting scheduled with them, with Nutmeg, next Thursday to talk through some of those challenges. But I would ask, particularly if it's a functionality issue, just to copy me on the ticket to Nutmeg, just so that we can make sure that we're working through those. I know Allison had sent me some of her tickets that she had sent, and Amanda's copied me in as well on some of the functionality issues that have popped up in the Hartford area. So I know that like closing out some of the appointments has been a problem. Also, I've gotten feedback from some of you that you will enroll a client, but then that enrollment seems to go missing over time. So obviously those are some of the key pieces that we need to correct with HMIS. But if there are any others, obviously please reach out and let us know or just copy me on the ticket. All right. So then just moving on, there were a lot of questions that have come up this week. So we just wanted to have some open conversation. Some of these questions may jog other questions for you guys. So, you know, please feel free to jump in as well. So one of the questions that came up is around the case management services and can those services be cumulative? So I think what this one particular provider was seeing is that someone may come in and be referred immediately to case management services because they don't have any income, right? So trying to increase income, trying to figure out what that housing plan could look like for that person. You know, if they then are offered financial assistance, can they, you know, can they start another 6 months of case management? And so when someone's in the program, you know, they're enrolled in HPP in totality, right? And so the original thinking was that we would offer a maximum of 6 months of case management service to someone from the time that they enroll in the program to 6 months after that. And part of it is that we didn't want to offer case management services indefinitely to someone, one, because we just don't have capacity to do that. And the thinking is that the intervention would be short term to connect them to longer term needs, much like we do with some of our other housing projects. So certainly the intent was for 6 months of case management, but if you guys are seeing that there's a need to extend that for any reason, we can do that. Like we have some discretion over that. It's not set into you know, the HUD regs. So, you know, we can be flexible as needed, but certainly like the 6 months is intended to be a guide. Any questions about that, thought, comment? Seems pretty clear.
Donna, DiTrio.
Join the meeting.
Okay. And then the other question that came up was around roles and responsibilities between the housing specialist and the case management staff. And in particular, if the plan is to relocate a tenant, who is responsible for doing that? And so, you know, in the case of relocation, I think the majority of the work is really going to fall upon the case manager to make sure that the housing search is completed.
Join the meeting.
Habitability inspections, that they're doing the majority of the paperwork. And then they will then pass along that paperwork to the housing specialist so that the housing specialist can complete the financial service request in HMIS. At this point in time, you know, the requesting the finances is probably one of the most important pieces of this work. And sometimes it can be the trickiest. And so I really wanted to set it up where there were kind of experts in each region to be able to request those financial services. So that was the thought behind asking the housing specialist to be the person to submit those requests directly to ACT, just to streamline that a little bit. And in some communities, like we've talked about before, some of you have that dual role. So like Marlon, you're right front and center of my screen. So, right, like you're doing it all for a particular tenant. Whereas in some regions, that responsibility is shared, right? So like in Fairfield County in the Northwest, you know, the housing specialist is working closely with the case manager, really kind of as one team to get the work done. Any questions about that or follow up? All right.
So
and then
So I know with the inspections, because we spoke about it on, I think it was earlier this week. That's up to the inspection is up to the agency, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Cause I briefly had a conversation with one of my case managers, and I know HRA does not do the inspection. So would I just go through Amanda from Journey Home to do the inspections?
You can certainly talk to Amanda about it, but I think it's our expectation that either the contractor or the subcontractor would be doing the inspection.
Okay.
And so, you know, the habitability inspections, they can be done remotely. A tenant or a landlord can submit pictures as well, if they're time and date stamped. So those could be workarounds. Okay. I know that, you know, some people, Saray and I talked about one particular tenant who just didn't have the ability to kind of work with the technology to be able to do that. So there might be a need to go out in person to do those inspections in rare, my hope is rare instances. And you know, if there's concern, we can talk more about how to do that. But I think the habitability standards and those inspections, I think that's a non-negotiable at this point in time. And it's very clear from the HUD regulations that we have to follow that those absolutely need to be done. Anything else about that? And I was planning to talk more about the habitability later on today.
Okay. So can I just back up 1 minute, Lee? Back to the case management piece. So people don't want, if they can't qualify for the finances and they don't want case management, what do we do? They're done?
That is actually a question that was also asked by another provider this week, Marlon. So So I guess some of the question also relates to like how are you all talking about case management or making that offer to someone? Like, I know you do this all the time, Marlon. So if you're talking to someone, how do you talk to them?
Right. So if I talk to them and they're not eligible financially, you know, either way kind of thing, but then, you know, they're not new to the system. Do you know what I'm saying? So they know about case management or they know about that kind of thing. When I'm talking to these people, you know that they don't want to hear what you have to say, you know, in terms of finding a job, et cetera. So I would try to hook them up, because that's what I think I told you last week, hook them up with another agency that really could maybe, you know, dovetail and do that holistic approach with them. So that's kind of what I do, but then I find them currently not appropriate for the program. So, I mean, those are the choices that we have on the, and, but then, you know, you write in the notes what you did. So that's kind of how I've been doing it. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And I mean, it sounds like you're not using the word case management or, I can connect you to a case manager, but you're doing like a softer sell where you're talking specifically about what their needs are and how to address
them. And who could help them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because that's what it is. Yeah. Like I told you with the youth system and, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, you see that bigger picture. Yeah. So I was just, because if you can't help them financially, I mean, this is what I was dealing with yesterday. It's like, well, they don't want to hear it, you know? So,
right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then they get, you know,
right.
A little testy or rude.
Right. Well, and I guess the other piece is when you're having that conversation with them, you know, like we talked about last week, like how do you help people that are like no income or low income? And like some of the people that you're talking about where they just clearly want you to like write them a check.
Right.
Is there a likelihood that they're going to be able to increase their income and be able to make that current apartment work for them?
No, not when they're in the weeds for like $12,000 and things like that. And the problem I'm seeing a lot is that they had gotten that $2,400 bonus on the 5 months. And then when you ask them about that, because I told you, I jump off of the budget. That's kind of how, I've got bills and this, that, and the other thing. Well, they had plenty of money to pay their apartment along with what they have for bills, if they even send the budget back to you. So, and then some of them are just getting unemployment, but that unemployment's going to end. So, you know, and landlords are not taking unemployment as income, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know mm-hmm. what I mean? When they're trying to go forward, they're not buying that. Right. So, I mean, there's a lot, it's a complicated situation as far, you know, as I can see. And I'm trying my best with the people that I talk to, but there's only so much, you know, unless they become the quarterback and run with the ball. I mean, I could only give them so much in terms of you know, support.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's helpful to hear about this because I think obviously you've set up the program kind of with that expectation that we're trying to increase stability, right?
Right.
And prevent homelessness at the same time. And so go ahead.
I feel sorry for the landlords. I really do. Cause you know, I talk at length with them and, you know, one was telling me the other day, yeah, but when you go around and they're token and they're drinking their alcohol and stuff like that, and they've got a couple of cell phones, you know, it's like, I hear this, you know, from a lot of the landlords. I mean, the empathy on the landlord part, I think is, you know, and they might've been empathetic in the beginning, but then as it goes on, one woman didn't pay her rent for 13 months, but she had money coming in. So I'm hearing all these stories.
Right. So like take that woman for 13 months, right? She had income, but didn't pay her rent. Does she have income to sustain the rent going forward on paper?
No, she's on unemployment. This is the one that's, and she's going to lose it, she says, next month. So, you know, I try all the angles. I mean, it's not like, and then they get annoyed.
And someone who's, and so like that particular woman, is she actively looking for work right now, trying to increase her income?
She says she is, but I don't know. You know, that part, I don't know.
Right.
So, and then I'll say like, well, what area are you interested in? Because, you know, sometimes Betty gives me some leads and stuff like that when she goes on some of her meetings. Oh, they say anything. And then you start telling them. They don't want to hear it. They want like a customer service job and not a cleaning job. But that's where the thing is a cleaning job. You know what I'm saying? It's all interesting to me, you know, and I have the utmost respect and I feel badly, but I don't know there's a whole intrinsic thing that needs to be changed, I think, you know, so.
Well, we're not going to solve that, right?
I know we're not, but that's just kind of how I'm, I'll be quiet. Go ahead.
No, well, and I mean, all I was going to say, and, you know, I think in your conversation with someone, right, like much of what you do in your other role in this system is like, is there a reasonable plan? And I think if you are using that as your test of, like, could this plan reasonably work if we offer financial assistance? I think that right now that's like the low bar. You know, I'm fine if, you know, you're kind of offering this plan like on a Hail Mary pass too. I'm fine with that. But would really defer to your judgment. You know, like, so I think that woman is a perfect example where she hasn't paid her rent in 13 months, obviously concerning that she had some income to be able to pay a portion. But if she is, right. So concerning, but not for us to make that determination about, but I think going forward, if there is some semblance of a plan, where she is trying to, like, look for work again, it sounds like questionable. But could it work to save her housing or to look for a new housing? And I think you also too, Marlon, like you pointed out, you have to figure out, are they willing to engage in that conversation and be part of that conversation with
you? Well, her execution is already done too. So it's, I mean, she's got, her execution was done and it wasn't because of COVID. You know, I read the whole thing. I read all the thing. And plus she's in our system and there's a pattern, if you know what I'm saying, without saying anything negative, you know, there's been a pattern with this. So, I mean, it's very complicated, but I just wanted to bring up that last part, you know, about having but didn't pay.
And I think we're going to see that quite a bit, quite honestly, right? I think particularly when households, particularly of like really low income, I think always making really hard decisions about where to use their money for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you for raising it. And I think, you know, it's helpful for me to hear some of the scenarios that all of you are encountering, because it can always help us to make modifications if needed, right? Can I switch gears and go to more of the technical aspects right now of some of the work? So the next kind of questions that had come in are around Smartsheet, and is it possible to get updates when the mediation team makes updates or mediates a case? So there is functionality now in Smartsheet to be able to see the status of a referral and the outcomes of that particular referral. And I can do a walkthrough so you just don't see it on a slide. But it's all in the data HPP worksheet, and mediation after the outcome is decided or a mediation is done, they will go in to update that sheet as well, so that they will be the ones responsible for that. We're currently working on creating some alert features in Smartsheet, so that when mediation goes in to make a change, the housing specialist will receive that alert. And I know Bo was testing out some of that functionality yesterday, and I know a couple of you had gotten some emails about him while we were testing that out. And Bo just put in the chat that he's currently working on it as we speak. So you'll probably see some test emails from him today. And Destiny DeJesus is also joining us today. So she's our new case manager in the New Haven area. She just started this week and will be working with New Reach. So welcome to Destiny. And Yoshi also likes this new functionality as well. Would you like me just to show you guys how it works in live time? Would that be helpful?
Yes.
Okay. Give me one second while I pull it up. Sorry, and I should have had this prepped for all of you this morning. Are you seeing my login screen? No, okay. I'll bring it up in 1 second. All right, so you should see the Smartsheet now.
Yeah, we see it now.
Okay, great. Okay, so this is in that data HPP view. And this is essentially the sheet where like all of the data lives. I'm gonna talk with Bo later on. We've done some separate reports for our case management team and our mediation team so that you're like when you pull up a report, you're just seeing the people who have been referred to you. So I will talk with Bo about creating that same functionality for the housing specialist so that when you log into this, you only see your particular individuals from your region that you're working with, because I know that this the sheet is quickly growing and it can be frankly a little bit overwhelming when you log into it. So I'm just going to use this particular client, Mr. Diaz. So I know that South Park was working with him. So right now, This is someone that was referred. And when you go in, if you are clicking on the refer, so once you fill out that form, right, the form to collect all of the data, if you want to refer to mediation or to case management services, you need to physically go into this sheet and make the updates, right? So in this case, Mr. Diaz was referred. That would send an alert to mediation. Mediation will then typically reach out to the housing specialist just to check in. And then once that, once they accept the case and they're working on it, they'll change it to accepted. They'll change it to closed after the mediation is done, or if mediation for whatever reason is no longer needed, they'll close that out. There are also instances where maybe mediation isn't quite appropriate right now. So they'll refer it back to the case management staff for the time being, so that you can see all of those kind of status updates. And then when mediation tries to contact the client, they'll let you know if an agreement was reached, if there was no agreement, if either the landlord or tenant refused to participate, or if they were unable to contact the landlord or tenant. So at any given point in time, you can see where those referrals stand. And I know Berta and her team are constantly looking at the referrals and checking the emails as they come through. I believe we also updated the same for case management services. For the case managers on the call, same would be true. So like if you have gotten a referral, I would ask that you go in on the back end to identify, you know, like this person, we know they've been referred to case management. You know, have you accepted them for referral, or when you're no longer working with them, that you would change that status to closed. And if you're making a referral for case management, you know, what was the primary reason for the referral? And we can check off, you know, if it was for housing search, education, job training, to access entitlements, clinical care, or life skills. So these lines in the dropdown, they all correlate to the kind of case management like checklist that Allison had created for us, and we had gone over a couple of weeks ago, kind of just to highlight best practices about when to refer for case management and what those needs might be for someone. Any questions on this?
Lee, this is Casey from Inspira Glen Stanford.
Hey, Casey.
Hi. So I had been asking about this yesterday at our regional meeting because we had gotten a referral and for mediation, it just said closed. But I didn't know if there's like a mechanism to show why it was closed. So it wasn't that they had done mediation, it was closed when I talked to the client. It was actually that they weren't appropriate. Actually, I think when I talked to Allison, I found out that they weren't appropriate for mediation. But there was no way to know that just looking at this form. And maybe there's a mechanism that I just didn't realize is there. But just looking at this, that's where I think the question came from, was that I didn't know why it had been closed.
Sure. So right now it would most likely be, you know, through direct communications between Quinnipiac and the housing specialist. But what we can do is make sure that all the case managers for that region are also connected to email. Ideally, case notes are going into HMIS anytime that there's an update for a client. As it stands now, it would be either the housing specialist or the case manager who would be responsible for entering those case notes in for a particular client, because we're working to get Quinnipiac connected to HMIS. Would those options seemingly work? either making sure we're including the case manager in the email or making sure case notes are going in HMIS.
Yeah, I think either way. And I see okay. in the chat was recommendation, just the comment section of Smartsheets, even that would be fine.
Diana UW Riley.
Yeah. Okay. So yes, and we can also, we can absolutely update the comments in Smartsheet. So I'll work with Berta and her team to add comments in so that you guys can also see them that way.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Yeah. No. Thanks for raising it. All right. Any other questions about this? All right. One of the other things that we know are that sometimes, where did we put it? In the outcomes, that sometimes we will refer for a service, but then the tenant refuses. And so we also want to, of course, be tracking any of the times that a tenant just declines the offer. And I think to Marlon's point earlier, that will probably most happen frequently with case management. And so that is over in this far further column about their, if they accepted case management or if they declined it.
Sorry.
Any other questions on the Smartsheet or some of the functionality or other functionality that you're seeing a need for? Okay.
And Lee, can I add something to that?
Yeah. Lee, hey, Berta.
Good morning. If you refer a case to me and I don't respond to you, whether with a phone call or email within 24 hours, and that means that I'm not seeing it, and I'm happy to, to check that out and to clarify that, because I usually work and respond to the case managers pretty much when they send it to me. That just means maybe I'm not seeing it on my end. So please feel free to reach out to me so we can work together to, to get the case to mediation if it's appropriate.
Have you run into any of those instances, Berta, where something hasn't popped up on your report?
Yeah, because I look at it on a different sheet. I look at it under QU mediation. And actually, I was talking to Saree, I think it was Saree or either Juanita, and they referred something and I didn't see it. And then they had to go back in there and then we resolved it. So sometimes I don't see them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So just feel free to please reach out.
Yeah, and if things aren't popping up, certainly check in with me so that we can make sure. Sometimes it's just a matter of, someone thinks they changed the status bar to referred, and for whatever reason, it wasn't updated correctly. So it's really anyone who's been referred or accepted. Should be popping up on your report, Berta. And then anyone else doesn't pop up on your active list.
Okay.
So if that's not happening, then let me know.
So I just have a question. Like, as you can see, the first one I actually found out today, she's gonna move. So would I close that out or would I say refer back to case management for that one, the first one?
So is there any need to mediate at this point to increase her ability to stay longer in the current unit, or is she actively looking to move?
It's my understanding she's actively going to move.
Okay. So I think that would be referred back to case management.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Any other questions about the Smartsheet? Okay, I'm just going to switch over and go back to my slide. All right. So then the other question that came up, because we did change the amount of assistance that we can offer to a household at the beginning of February? Like how should you be applying the amount of assistance that's available to someone? Particularly for people who are pending, a landlord might have been told that they can access 100% of the arrearage versus now, you know, we're only offering up to 80%. Ultimately, I want you to, you know, for any of those tenants who had come in like right around that period where we transitioned to some of the new eligibility or the increase in financial assistance, I always want to err on what's best for the tenant. And certainly if we've made a verbal agreement to the landlord, I want to honor that. And so, you know, there might be some instances where, you know, we're offering more rental arrearage than we would now to a landlord. That's fine. I would just ask that you put a case note in HMIS. And certainly if you're submitting any paperwork to ACT, that you would just note that, you know, they were enrolled in the project, you know, prior to changes in the financial assistance increasing or the new changes to the financial assistance. And so you're following the old guidance, just as long as it's clearly noted about any divergence from the operations now. Does that make sense? Okay. And
Ms. Mealy, I have a question. How would that work with the smart sheet? I mean, I'm sorry, with the HPP calculation sheet, because now if you plug that information in, it's going to give you a different answer. How would that work?
I think you would just have to, you would have to write it in Berta, okay. You know, or like create a text box and just note any reasons that it's different.
Okay.
Yeah. And if the client reports that they get regular income from a family member that they're using to help pay their portion of rent, is there any specific form or letter? So we don't have a form or template required. Frankly, I don't want to add yet another form for someone to fill out. I think that's a bit cumbersome. So, you know, anything like a email, letter, copy of a check that a family member writes, whatever it might be, just as long as you have the documentation and it's clear that this, I don't know, comes on a monthly basis or however frequently they get paid is fine at this point. This also ties in, I think Yoshi, you had brought this up last week about whether or not individuals can self-certify. So I went back and looked at the regs and yes, in rare instances, you know, we can allow someone to self-certify their income. So for all of the reasons that you guys had mentioned last week, particularly if it's someone who uses the bank card or they're working under the table, like whatever it may be, you know, they can provide a written certification of how much they make. And again, I think to lessen the burden of paperwork, I don't want to create a form to be able to do it, like an email from that tenant or a letter, whatever it may be, is perfectly fine. And I would just ask that you document the reason why we obtained a self-certification as opposed to being able to access the third-party document. Okay. All right. And so we had also any questions about anything up until this point? All right. So also wanted to check in just on a couple of things around the scheduler. And I had gotten some emails over the past couple of weeks from 211. It seems like there's an increase in individuals who are calling in or calling back to 211 saying they didn't get a call from kind of the local provider. And so I'm just wondering if there's any.
Lee? Yeah. I'm sorry. This is Jamie Bell. Yeah. I just had a question on the prior topic on the slides. Do you have a sense? Does anyone have a sense of what explains the big uptake since the last slides that you presented last Thursday, I guess. So we're way back at the beginning. I just was thinking about it more and wondered whether folks understand or have a theory about what that is.
My assumption is probably because we've opened up prioritization and eligibility. Okay. So, you know, we're now working with people who might be behind in rent, but have a state or federal subsidy, you know, all of those things. So that's my assumption. My hope is that, you know, we're doing a better job identifying people as well, you know, either through the 211 process or more people are reaching out.
Okay.
But those are my best guesses.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So just checking in on the callbacks and the scheduler, how is it going for you guys? Is there any confusion around it?
Well, I know that when you sent me my mail gate, this is Marlon talking, I was not aware. I check every day. So sometimes for the two that I reference back to you, I didn't see those on my schedule. And I had the Nutmeg, when I was on Nutmeg with that other case that I talked about, the Nutmeg specialist there showed, you know, we went on the referrals to the can. He showed me how to do that whole thing. They weren't on that one either. So I don't know how I missed them, but I will call them.
Okay. I know with some of the, this is Cherie. I know with some of the individuals that I do call, some of them don't even have a voicemail box set up. And then, you know, I'm unable to leave a voicemail. So then they'll call back to 211 stating that they haven't received a phone call.
Sure. And Suri, are you putting a note in HMIS when you do attempt those calls or putting
Yes. Yeah, I do. I put in the case note, but I was first doing my due diligence. And it did happen. I also put it into the case note so that I guess 211 could actually read the case note. But I thought 211 would go into the due diligence to actually see that it was being done. But I did start putting it into the case notes itself now.
Perfect. Thank you for doing that. And that I think, you know, having it in both places is really helpful because in the due diligence and the attempts to contact, it's all in one place. But sometimes when you're looking for more information about a caller, you know, it's also good to have it in the narrative.
And Lee, some of these people that I call back have absolutely no idea who I am or what they've called about. They just call everybody is what they tell me. So then I have to explain why.
Sure.
What? Oh, okay. Well, I think I'm set. I said, oh, okay. This is especially the senior citizens, you know, or the disabled.
Sure. My other question is, you know, when you're looking at the scheduler, are you also looking retrospectively? So not just pulling up today's appointments, but also looking maybe over the past week. I'm seeing Essence shake her head, yes. Do people know how to do that in HMIS, or would you like me to walk through that?
Lee, I know with me, I always take down whoever I'm doing within that day and take notes within another notepad so that if I don't get in contact with them, I put the note in the notepad knowing to contact this person again tomorrow, something like that. But I always go back within the week just in case.
Yeah, that's great. And if people don't know what I'm talking about, I'm just gonna show you real quickly. Um, So when you're looking at the appointment schedule, right, EP appointment schedule, and this will take a minute because it's sharing, you have the opportunity to either look toward the future, toward today and tomorrow's appointments or anything scheduled in the future or the past. So you can always click on this past reservations and then set your time frame for anything that you want to look for. And then everyone will pull up. And then certainly, do you guys all know how to download? So if you go to the teardrop and click the Excel report, it will populate the Excel spreadsheet of all of the appointments for that time frame. And so then you can sort and filter through your particular appointments if there's anyone that you need to check in on.
Yeah, for me, I noticed that was an issue, so I had to do an export DC because I did get an email from 211 stating that the person never got called, and when I looked on my list, I didn't even see her name. But when I went to the past, mm-hmm. I was able to recover that she did come in, and so possibly I could have like missed her. So I was actually able to reach a few people yesterday. So that is actually a good thing to do, going back just to see if you missed anybody. But I also did notice that for my section, for New Haven, that a lot of people were coming in twice or three times on the list, like the CAN list. And I don't know why. So
yeah, and I saw that too when I was looking at some of the data too, Essence. And this isn't just a New Haven. I'm seeing it multiple places. And I didn't look into the notes closely enough, but it seems as if maybe people are calling back into 211 multiple times. And so then they're getting added on to the schedule, like again. I don't think this is a bad thing because I think it helps to ensure that we're not missing anyone if they're calling back again. And, you know, kind of like Saray had described, you know, it very well may be that you are attempting to make contact with that person, but for whatever, you know, missed calls, no voicemail, etc. You know, the other thing in HMIS, we also have, we also have access to people's emails. So again, like based on your agency policies, email may, this particular person didn't have it, but you may also be able to see an email address as well. And if you need help navigating HMIS to figure out where to find the email address, please like reach out or talk with your supervisor too. But I think usually, you know, certainly phone or email is there. If for some reason someone's calling 211 and they don't have access to a phone or email, 211 should be giving them your local contact information so that they can reach out to you directly. So I know Felicity had to jump off, but just to talk about kind of the point that she had raised around the warm handoff. So I imagine, again, depending on your agency, like I can see this happening quite a bit at New Opportunities because people are already reaching out to some of the CAP agencies or like Always Home. They know that you do prevention by trade. So kind of reaching out to your agencies, just looking for assistance in general. Certainly if, you know, you're getting a call from someone and you think that they're going to be eligible for HPP, like rather than just say, well, you know, call 211, you could call 211 with them just to start the process with them, get them on the schedule, get their data entered into HMIS. And if you, for some reason, had to do a call with 211 to initiate that process, you would be able to select option number 8 when you're in the 211 queue so that you don't have to wait on hold. So that's the silent prompt for providers to select. So you're able to basically jump to the top of the queue. and you know, when calling in, you know, just letting the 211 contact specialist know that you need to enroll someone into the HPP program, you know, because by that point you're probably going to have a sense about their general eligibility for the project, et cetera. So there's nothing that would prevent you from, you know, assisting that person in the process. It, you know, it creates a better warm handoff, and we think a better experience for the client. Has anyone had to do that process yet with someone? No. I do it from time to time when we get all sorts of calls into DOH. So usually it's pretty seamless.
I don't do it with the 211, but like I said, if it's another agency, I certainly would do that with the other agency, you know, source it out first and then not send them back to
him. Yeah.
We'll say that we had the opposite happen. So we made a referral from HPP to CAN. And that actually went pretty well once I realized what was happening. I think through this are learning and realizing like when to make the connection to the opposite. But so far, so good. So at least on the other
end. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Nice.
So from an agency point of view and the Eastern CAN, you know, we have already, you know, put our information out there about what we can do as an agency. So, I mean, I don't know, that's probably not relevant to everybody on the call, but still, you know, that's, the agencies would hopefully know that they needed to call us for the prevention, you know, for the back rent, et cetera.
Yep. And, you know, in reality, as people come into our system all sorts of ways, right? And so like how do we make that person's experience the most positive? And certainly like from the client's perspective, if they're coming to you for help, right? And they're in an eviction process, they've got the arrearage, whatever, they need help. You know, certainly just telling them to like go and call 211 is not going to be a great experience for the client, but certainly much better to be able to say to them, you know, we just need to go through like a registration process or get you connected to the data system. I think people can understand that, particularly if you're able to hang on the phone with them as well. It just makes their experience better, and you can help to explain what's happening as you go. All right. Is there any other questions that have come up? Are there any particular instances? I know I did get some questions this week. And Christina, maybe you want to talk to it a little bit more about individuals and like this question about, you know, if someone is eligible for financial assistance. And I know we talked a little bit about it last week in terms of trying to create like a holistic plan for the client. And is there, like, are there still outstanding questions about like when it's appropriate maybe to refer to mediation? Anything left that kind of popped back up this week?
Lee, this is Julius.
Hey.
Something did happen literally about an hour ago here. We had someone come in and had the appointments and everything, but we literally could not do anything for them on one side. Right now I'm working with them as case management. The problem is that they were literally going to get evicted tomorrow at 9 a.m. So I had to reach out to the marshal, and we spoke for 30 seconds as far as my role in South Park, and then we went into 2 minutes in my prior life. Long story short, we're able to move that back until 9 o'clock on Tuesday. In the meantime, I've already reached out to two people that may be able to help the client. So I don't know if it's something that we could do or probably be a best practice, but there may be times that if you have, if you can get the marshal list, you may want to call the marshal directly and see if they're willing to work with them.
Sounds like you worked a small miracle today for someone, Julius. That's phenomenal, right? And I think, you know, that's awesome. And it sounds like you're trying to put a short-term plan together for that person. What are you thinking kind of in the short term for them to intervene for by Tuesday?
Short term, I'm reaching out to the union rep. They're a member of a union. Let them know exactly what's going on, seeing if we can get anything done as far as the union paying a portion of the rent, I mean, a portion of a hotel for a week. I'm also reaching out to a couple of churches that I have a very good relationship with and seeing if they're willing to back them for another week. Once we do that, since they're both actively working right now, that gives me 2 weeks that I can look for an apartment. I already reached out to a friend of mine who's given me a apartment list from the Connecticut Association of Realtors that I will be sharing with someone after it's vetted through my bosses, who are probably going to want to talk to me after this. But anyway, we're going to see what happens there. But right now, my main thing is 2 weeks from today, they need to be in a safe place. And that's exactly what I'm going to make happen.
So could I ask Julius?
You are awesome.
Julius is amazing. He's really, really good with landlords and other stakeholders who are like non-traditional partners in this work. So I just want to give a huge shout out because he's really good at that. But I want to make sure, do we know that she is eligible, Julius? Because I don't want to put a huge amount of energy and time and then find out that she does not meet basic eligibility requirements.
We checked with Berta on this, and Berta suggested that we go up the chain. And from what I understand, that as far as a case management standpoint, they're eligible. But as far as actually being able to do something immediately, because I'm looking at the summary process of execution right now, I don't think the landlord is going to want to negotiate.
Right. No, I'm not worried about like whether we can help them. I just wonder if they meet like the income requirements and the non-payment of rent and, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Together, they're working a giant right now. I mean, I get it confused. Anyway, they're working at a supermarket right now. Combined salary is 26 plus. That's why I'm reaching out to the union to see if there's anything that they can do.
Great. I think this is one of the sort of examples of what happens to us a lot in Hartford, is that things are really at a dire point when people come to us. And so even though like we need to sort of calculate whether they're eligible and get all the documentation, there's also a need to intervene so quickly that you can't really wait too long for those documents to come in. So I appreciate your ability to sort of manage situations in real time, Julius, and all of my team.
Yes, ma'am, thank you.
I would fully agree and echo what Yoshi said. I think that it sounds amazing what you have so quickly pieced together for this couple, Julius. It's amazing. And I think I so appreciate, like Yoshi said, kind of all of those non-traditional partners that you thought of. I think it's awesome. It really is. And I think, you know, regardless of what happens for this particular couple, you've done all of the right things, right, to the best of your ability. And I think I also really like the opportunity to offer like a very quick short-term intervention for them. And some of it, certainly I think what HUD is very clear about is not serving people above the 50% AMI. But I think in situations like this where you need to intervene quickly, if there's a reasonable expectation, like maybe for this couple, you don't have the pay stub in hand. Maybe it is quicker for them to self-certify. I would rather try to intervene again with the reasonable expectation that they're gonna fall below the 50% AMI threshold, and offer some kind of assistance as opposed to like waiting for a pay stub, right? Like you absolutely did the right thing by intervening quickly for them. It's awesome.
Thank you, man.
I have all the pay stubs. I have everything.
You are our compliance steward. Thank you, Juanita.
So Thanks, Juanita. And the only thing that I was thinking when I heard it is it's going to be 18 degrees tonight. We got to do something. So,
yeah. No, it's awesome. You know, I also think, Julius, you know, what it does raise for me too is that I think all of you are going to get people that are so close to the Marshall coming out, as in this instance. And I also don't want to create any kind of false expectations, right? And that because of the timing of when someone comes to our attention, you know, I think like you all have talked about, like we're going to try to do everything we can for this household. But there are going to be instances where we're simply not able to intervene quickly enough, right? Because I know all of you, or I'm getting to know all of you and how passionate you are about this work. But I also don't think it is a failure in any way of the work or the program if there's some people that are so close to that Marshall coming out. But I just also want to put that out there, just to level set expectations as well. So thank you for that great example, Julius. And I think, you know, that this is really kind of what the purpose of these calls is to be able to share a little bit of the work and really identify some like really awesome interventions that you're coming up with that might be non-traditional. I would not have thought to call the union rep, right? Like that's why you do what you do. So I'm just wondering if there are, you know, other kind of things that people want to spotlight or other scenarios that have come up that you need help with. All right. Yoshe, I saw that you put in the chat that you had some other questions.
Yes, they're very small, low-level questions, but I did want to check in. We have some discrepancy between the instructions on what to do if there are follow-up questions with respect to a ticket that we submit to ACT. So if we submit like a financial services request ticket to ACT, there's in the instructions, it says reply to that email. This is such a small thing, but like it says reply to that email. And we've heard from ACT that if we do that, it causes problems with the ticketing system. So I just wanted to get clarity. Should we continue the thread on financial services requests that need to be followed up on, or do we need to stop emailing?
Maria, I think Brendan's on the call. Do you want to take that?
Can you say that again, Josie?
Yes. So if we submit a ticket to you guys to let you know that there's a financial services request in the queue, and then there's something that needs to be worked out with respect to that ticket that we've submitted to you, the instructions say to reply to that ticket to preserve kind of a thread of communication with respect to one ticket. But then someone said that when they spoke with you that they should not do that. So we just wanted to figure out if we should or shouldn't be doing that.
If you're still working on the ticket and the ticket was not rejected, yes, you could still continue to continue on that thread. Only if the ticket was rejected, it becomes a problem because the ticket was already closed in our end.
Okay, so if it gets rejected.
Yes,
if it gets rejected
and you reopen it, then you're reopening a ticket if it gets closed because it was there for 20 or so days and you open a ticket again, you're opening a ticket in our end and we already had closed that ticket. So if we tell you that something happened to, let's say to your ticket because you forgot to do something and we're telling you to just do a new ticket instead of going back to that ticket, just open a new ticket and we'll look at a new ticket that you did.
Okay, cool. That was my big question, was whether we should respond to an email or not. So thank you for that.
No, yep. If they go on the thread and they're asking you questions and you're going back and forth, it is okay.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Maria. I appreciate it. Anything else, Yoshi, that you had? Was that your burning question?
I just checked the email that I sent to Amanda and all the other burning questions were already addressed. So we're good. Thank you.
Awesome. And then another thing, I know several of your regions have been meeting locally because not only maybe is HPP available in the region, but other resources as well. So as part of those conversations, I know Amanda from Journey Home had met with some of the local providers, and she did a recording of a walkthrough of enrolling a client in HMIS, kind of having some of the conversations about like when to refer which, to which programs. So in the slides, but I'll also send it out as a, whatchamacallit, email. There's also, she did a recording for that. So if people would find it helpful, you know, I know since this is a learning process, everyone learns in different ways, but I will share the recording with all of you so that if it's helpful to take that time or you're getting stuck on a particular instance, like there's like a step-by-step walkthrough of it. I had also sent out the calculation worksheet earlier this week, and just wondering if there were any questions that had come up around that. Have people been able to take a look at it? I need some feedback from you guys. And I think Bo was very helpful in changing some of the language about how we conceptualize this, because I know there was some confusion last week about kind of how we had worded it, right? And so ultimately with the rental arrearage, what it comes down to is either you're offering 80% of the rental arrearage or 6 months of the total rent, whichever is less. And so that might be an easier way to explain it to a landlord, you know, when we're talking about what we could offer to someone, but also knowing that the maximum of what we can offer may not be what we actually offer to a landlord, right, in terms of the arrearage, because you have to think about the plan in totality, right? So we're not going to pay $8,000 in rental arrearage if we're also having to be planful of paying for a security deposit or first month's rent because we're going to help the tenant move to a new apartment. Have people been able to play around with this a bit? Or no one's used it yet. You haven't had a need to.
I wanted to play around with it, but I wasn't able to. I only got your first two attachments. I could only open the first two. I forgot what they were, but I wasn't able to get to that one yet. So I'm going to try it from
Okay, and that's helpful, Marlon. I'll resend it.
Okay.
I'll resend it today in email. And then again, it's also in the Dropbox, but I'll resend it.
I didn't go in the Dropbox, but I did go on your email. Like I said, whatever those first two were, it was all I could open.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it said there were four.
No worries.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That is helpful to know. All right. Great. Anything else? Usually the questions come the first time you have to use it. So please reach out, okay? All right. So we have about 15 minutes left. So next topic I wanted to check in around, another item that Amanda had put together. I had also sent this in the email. So Marlon, you might not have been able to open it. But I know this is teeny tiny print. It's much better when you have it in a Word document. Again, for the local providers, Journey Home had put together a workflow, kind of more of that visual chart of, you know, here's your scenario, like yes, no, do this, do that. And so this was sent to you guys in your email. I wanted to highlight it today. Again, it's just meant to be a reference tool if this is helpful to you in that decision-making process. about, you know, what to do in HMIS, when to refer to mediation, when to refer to case management or legal services. So did people see this in your email? Okay, I'm seeing Jessica say yes. Okay. So again, just meant to be something that's a reference and helpful to all of you. So wanted next to check in on mediation referrals. We had lots of discussion about this last week about when to refer to mediation. Just wanted to check in again to see if there were any instances that had come up or in your conversations with BIRDA, if there were still any outlying questions about when to make those referrals over. Or BIRDA, are there any themes that you are seeing?
A lot of the themes is that they cannot afford their rent. Like they don't, they're not probably going to be able to get additional income is what we're seeing. And then like, we'll talk about it and we all decide that probably is the best goes back to case management. And then some of them really want to move.
Yep. And there wasn't a sense of needing to negotiate with the landlord in order to maybe extend the time in their current apartment while we're putting additional planning in place.
That hasn't come up yet, but a couple of them, I don't remember off the top of my head, the tenant, I know it was one off the top of my head, the tenant did not want to leave.
Okay. And that's also helpful to know, right? Like when the tenant, you know, we're offering the assistance, but the tenant has refused. And it sounds like, just based on my conversations with BIRDA, that some of those preliminary conversations, once you guys make a referral to mediation, have been really helpful to have, just to kind of talk through the needs of the household. Does anyone have any comments or thoughts how that process when you're referring to mediation has been? Or feedback to offer to BIRDA?
Yeah, I like to say Ms. BIRDA's great. Very attentive and very, very helpful. We called and reached out to her this morning as well. And she was one of the reasons we were able to be able for Mr. Clark to call the marshal and get things happening for this family this morning. But Ms. BIRDA's responses have been great. As long as you can have her email or you have her number, she's very attentive. She reaches out, she lets us know, you know, if we're moving in the right direction or which way we need to go. So I appreciate her.
Thank you, Ms. Juanita. Okay.
Thanks, Juanita.
I hate to jump on the bandwagon right after Juanita did, but yes, you were very helpful this morning. And I have a very good feeling that because of you, there's going to be another family that's going to not be in a bad situation. So thanks for your advice and your wise counsel.
You're welcome.
This is a feel good Friday. I love it. it's really nice to hear about when collaboration works so well, right, to benefit the people that we serve. So thank you guys. Anything else that's like burning for anyone at this point in time in terms of the referral process, mediation? You know, we'll always continue to refine like the communication between the entities, but like BIRDA has obviously been great in terms of follow up and connecting with all of you. Awesome. All right. So just wanted to move on. I updated the slides. I had shown these to you last week, but I just updated the slides and the language around the financial and rental assistance updates. Again, just to make it clearer in terms of what we meant, like this first bullet, that the maximum allowed rental arrearage would either be 80% of the arrearage owed or 6 months of the rent, whichever is less. And then also it had come up over the past week whether or not we could include legal fees when calculating the arrearage. So late fees are allowable, legal fees are not. And so some of that is in the program guidelines around what's allowable under rental arrearage. So just to be crystal clear, that we can calculate in the late fees, but not the legal fees. And again, rental assistance can be offered for up to 3 months. And then the total of all financial assistance cannot exceed the 8,000. And Bo was kind enough to put some alert language on the calculation worksheet. So if for some reason you're calculating some assistance for a tenant and it is $10,000, some big bold red text is going to pop up that says you need to double check this because it exceeds the total amount. So he's very good about keeping us on track with alerts and things.
Lee, I'm sorry, I have a question.
Yeah.
This is Berta. What would be a justifiable reason to pay any rent moving forward?
It could be the person, I mean, gosh, that's a big question, right? It's going to be pretty varied depending on the household circumstances, but like what comes to mind is that they just started a job 2 weeks ago and they haven't gotten their first paycheck yet. So we might pay a month or two until their income stabilizes. Or, you know, maybe they're going to move in with a roommate in 2 months, but that apartment is not going to be ready, for 2 months. So we need to help them with their current rent.
So if a tenant said, you know, I think I may run into problems next month, would that be okay to help sustain the family to pay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah. And again, this is the same slide that I shared with you guys last week around the financial, the state and federal subsidy, and that we're only allowed to pay that one time rental arrearage for the household. So that's nothing new. So I just wanted to highlight, I was checking on some of the financial service requests that have gone into ACT, and there were just a couple of forms that I wanted to highlight for you guys. So one's the rental assistance agreement, and this is just basically our outline if we're paying for rental arrearage or short-term rental assistance to a landlord. To identify like what we're offering to them. We're also required under the HUD regs to ensure that there's language in here about VAWA protections. So like we had talked about the requirements of a lease versus a rental assistance agreement. And so, if we're paying rental arrearage, a lease is not required, but the rental assistance agreement is, right? So it's like a lesser agreement that we have to have the landlord sign. But one of the things that had gotten missed in the paperwork to ACT was the signatures of the owner of the property as well as the agency staff that's doing it. Because what this agreement does, or the intent of the agreement, is that it outlines how much we're providing in terms of assistance for that particular tenant. And this is also where we verify ownership of the property. And so this is very important in particular, because, you know, if we don't verify ownership of the property, it could open us up to fraud. So we want to make sure that the landlord is who they say they are and that they are in fact the owner of the property. If you've been in housing for long enough, you have most likely encountered some strange scenario where a property manager or an owner of the property is not always who they say they are. So we just need to protect ourselves in that. And there's a couple of ways to verify ownership. Probably one of my favorite websites is the Vision Government Solutions. So some of the municipalities contract out with this agency, and they maintain all of the property records. And so typically, based on the town, you're able to look it up either by owner's name or the property address, and it will show you ownership of the property. Some towns that do not participate, you may need to do a search online specifically for that municipality's assessor's office. And if you need help with any of this, like, please don't hesitate to reach out, because it can be confusing when you're looking for some of this information. If for some reason these websites don't have the most current information, because sometimes the property gets sold, a variety of things, all we would need would be a copy of the warranty deed or quit claim deed from the landlord showing who the owner is. And when we do like the W-9 for ACT, all of that ownership information should add up, right? Because sometimes landlords will use property management agencies, they'll use multiple LLCs. Sometimes the owner gets confused on like who the actual owner is on paper for a particular property. So it's just making sure that everything matches. And that is some of the work that ACT will do, is making sure that the paperwork matches up, that the EIN number that the owner provides matches in the IRS database. So there's a lot of cross-referencing when the landlord's providing information with regard to ownership of the property. Any questions about that? And I think it was most often, like when I was kind of checking some of the paperwork, that this section in terms of the ownership was most often missed. So again, I just want to make sure that we are not opening ourselves up to any fraudulent behavior. All right. And then I am going to pause there just because there's only 3 minutes left with our time by my clock. And I think the next section around habitability might take us a little bit longer. So I will kick that off to next week. But again, any last minute things that people have before we wrap up?
Lee, if I may. Mm-hmm. One thing that I learned today, thank you again, Berta, is if you are working, I mean, everybody has state marshals. I would make a copy of the state marshal list and reach out to your state marshals, get a relationship with them. It may come in useful one day.
It's a great idea, Julia. And I will see if we can find like a listing of that and circulate it to you guys. I don't know if that exists or not.
That'll be my homework. I'll send it to Yoshi and then I'll send it to you.
You're the best. Thank you. Awesome. So thank you guys for all of your great work and your thoughtfulness in this work. I really do appreciate it greatly. So keep the questions coming. I think it only makes the program and the work that you guys do better. So thank you all. Have a great weekend. And I will talk to you all soon.
Thanks, Lee.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Mommy, bye.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry. I got clients in the office I didn't expect to come today. So I don't even know what's going on right now. Can you hear me, Dawn? Yeah.